This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
People in Iran hold rallies to condemn a recent desecrating move by the French magazine Charlie Hebdo. Officials call it the sign of the enemy's desperation. Yemen calls on the international rights organizations to stop Saudi genocide, saying over 2,000 Yemenis have died since a ceasefire with Riyadh came into effect. And supporters of Brazil's far-right ex-president Jair Bolsonaro stormed the National Congress building in protest at President Lula da Silva's inauguration. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story, Iranian people and officials reacting to French magazines insulting Muslim sanctities and the country's religious and national values. President Ebrahim Raisi has condemned the sacrilege, saying resorting to insults under the pretext of freedom indicates the West's despair and failure in recent riots they fanned in Iran. Also, Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani recommended French authorities follow the basic principles of international law, which is mutual respect and honoring the religious values of other nations. Meanwhile, the Iranian people have rallied in the cities of Tehran and Qom to denounce the move. The demonstrators in front of the French embassy slammed the French government for its double standards in dealing with such insults. The French weekly Charlie Hebdo has published cartoons of Iran's religious and political authorities. Infamous magazine has a record of insulting the Prophet of Islam as well. We asked political commentator Fouad Izadi why Charlie Hebdo easily insults other faiths despite the existence of hate speech laws in France.
In France, we have hate speech laws in the books. And what the French government could do is just easily invoke those laws, prosecute the magazine. That's what they should do. What they do in practice is the French government gives this magazine financial support. They gave the magazine 1 million euros in 2015, and the current French president, Macron, has been supporting the magazine. And this is also not something that's required from the French president. We remember previous French officials that used to criticize the behavior of this magazine. And in fact, the French government has banned the magazine 3 times in its history for violating hate speech laws. So what we see is basically the French engaging in hybrid warfare against Iran using the magazine.
A top Iranian general has hailed the country's retaliatory missile strikes on the U.S. Ain al-Assad airbase in Iraq 3 years ago today. Brigadier General Amir Hatami says the attack shattered U.S. delusions of grandeur in the region and beyond. The military aide to the Iranian leader described the strikes as lightning fast and devastating. Raid was carried out in retaliation for the assassination of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps unleashed more than a dozen ballistic missiles on the base in western Iraq. It caused significant damage, and the Pentagon said that more than 100 American forces suffered traumatic brain injuries. Iran called it a first slap in the face of the U.S. and vowed harsher revenge in the future. In Pakistan, people have held a ceremony in the port city of Karachi to mark the anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who they believe changed the course of history by fighting terrorism in the region. Mohamed Touri reports.
Braving the bone-chilling weather, these mourners are remembering those who gave their lives for the future of this region and beyond.
These people gathered here to pay tribute to martyrs to the war against the key terrorist groups in the region who were backed by the U.S.
General Qasem Soleimani was remembered as a hero for humanity, who transcended geographical and ethnic boundaries, and whose campaign against the Daesh terrorist groups saved every Muslim and non-Muslim country, including Pakistan.
Shahid Qasem Soleimani.
Mati Qasem Soleimani is a way of life and a school of thought to fight the enemies of the Muslim world and the East. If the world of Islam and countries in the East want to save themselves from the malicious designs of the West aimed at breaking this region into pieces to create its new world order, then they have to follow Qasem Soleimani and the strategies he used to save the West Asia region from the collapse.
Speakers at the gathering shed light on different dimensions of martyr Soleimani's life and his legacy, as well as how it impacted the region.
The U.S. and its Western allies had remained helpless and in despair in the face of global terrorism. Martyr Qasem Soleimani put an end to the darkness of this hopelessness vis-a-vis U.S.-backed Takfiri terrorism.
Some 70,000 Pakistani citizens have been killed at the hands of U.S.-backed Takfiri terrorists, including in attacks on schools and children. These were the same terrorists that General Soleimani took out in an anti-terror campaign for which he will always be remembered. Mohamed Touri, Karachi.
Yemen's Ministry of Human Rights has called on international organizations to put an end to what is called the Saudi genocide in the war-ravaged country. In a statement, the ministry condemned Saudi atrocities against civilians, saying it is shocked over the silence of international bodies, including the United Nations. The statement said the international community has to launch a probe and hold perpetrators of crimes accountable. It also reminded the world that Saudi attacks in Yemen have claimed over 2,250 lives since the beginning of a truce in April of last year. It further lamented that artillery shells and machine guns are still raining down on the heads of civilians. Now, Saudi Arabia, with its allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015 to reinstate a Riyadh-friendly regime. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed and millions are grappling with hunger due to the war and crippling Saudi blockade on the country. Israel has suspended a VIP pass of Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki that could ease his travel in and around the occupied West Bank. That's in response to Palestinians' bid to involve the International Court of Justice in their conflict with the Israeli regime. Israeli forces confiscated al-Maliki's card while he was entering from Jordan. Israel's new right-wing cabinet has announced a series of measures after the UN General Assembly, responding to a Palestinian appeal, asked the ICJ, that's the International Court of Justice, for an opinion on the legal status of Israel's occupation of Palestine. Regime's measures include using Palestinian money to compensate Israelis killed or injured in Palestinian operations. It's also imposed a moratorium on Palestinian construction. Separately, an Israeli minister who recently stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque has directed troops to remove Palestinian flags from public spaces. That's after a long-serving Palestinian prisoner waved a flag while receiving a hero's welcome upon his release. Israel also revoked VIP cards of three senior Palestinian officials for paying a visit to the freed inmate. Washington's animosity toward Tehran continues unabated. In a new move, the U.S. has slapped a new set of sanctions against Iran, accusing the Islamic Republic of sending drones to Russia. The U.S., of course, has a long history of imposing such measures targeting Iranians. But what is the U.S. really seeking by maintaining such a policy?
The United States has yet again imposed a fresh round of sanctions against the Islamic Republic. This time, targeting the country's suppliers of drones, Washington claims Russia has been using in the war in Ukraine. The sanctions targeted six executives and board members of Kursk Aviation Industries. The U.S. Department of Treasury said the group, which has been under U.S. sanctions since 2013, was a key Iranian defense manufacturer responsible for designing and producing drones. Washington says the drones have been used to target civilian infrastructure in Ukraine during the conflict with Russia. Among those designated was Sayed Hojatollah Qureshi, Quds Aviation Industries board chairman and senior official in Iran's Ministry of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics. The Treasury said Qureshi had led Iran's military research and development efforts and was responsible for negotiating Iran's agreement with Russia for the supply of the Iranian drones for the war in Ukraine. The Treasury also imposed sanctions on Qasem Damovandian, Quds Aviation Industries managing director and board member. It said he had likely facilitated the group's supply of drones to Iran's military services and the training of Russian personnel on the use of drones. The accusations come as Iranian officials say Ukrainians have so far failed to provide any evidence for their claim that Russia was using Iranian drones in its war on Ukraine. Speaking following a technical meeting between Ukrainian and Iranian experts, Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, said the Ukrainian side had stopped short of presenting any evidence of Russia's use of Iranian drones in its war in Ukraine. Prior to that, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian had also reacted to the U.S. and other Western countries' allegations, noting that Tehran had provided Moscow with a limited number of drones, but the delivery had taken place months before the war in Ukraine. The sanctions come as the U.S. Treasury says it will continue to use every tool at its disposal to deny Russian President Vladimir Putin the weapons he is using to wage his unprovoked war in Ukraine. The Friday sanctions also targeted the director of Iran's Aerospace Industries Organization, which the Treasury claimed was the key organization responsible for overseeing Iran's ballistic missile programs. The move freezes any U.S. assets of those designated and generally bars Americans from dealing with them. Those engaged in certain transactions with the targeted individuals also risk being hit by sanctions. The United States has previously imposed sanctions on companies and people it accused of producing or transferring Iranian drones that Russia has used to attack infrastructure in Ukraine.
Now, even though Iran provided drones to Russia prior to its military operation in Ukraine, the U.S. and its Western allies continue to supply Kiev with lethal weapons. U.S. and its allies are now poised to deliver a variety of armored vehicles to the Ukrainians despite warnings from Russia. Yet Iran is being targeted by sanctions by the West, the U.S. in particular, and the reasons for the double standards are quite clear.
The military-related sanctions on Iran are just a small part of the U.S. so-called maximum pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic. Washington has left no stone unturned in pressuring Tehran to fulfill its demands, given that the so-called maximum pressure policy has so far failed to produce the intended result. It is widely believed that by pressuring the government and subsequently the people of Iran, what the United States is and has been pursuing after 40 years of the Islamic Revolution is seeking regime change. The sanctions against Iran over its supply of drones to Ukraine comes as the West has itself been fanning the flames of the Ukraine war by providing billions of dollars worth of military assistance to Kiev. That includes the United States, Germany, France, and the UK. The weapons they provide range from mortar fighting vehicles and Leopard tanks like AMX-10RC armored combat vehicles and Abrams tanks. This is while providing Kiev with such weaponry could increase the risk of direct confrontation between Moscow and the West. Iran has been under the UN and US sanctions since the 1979 revolution. What comes to the spotlight is the futility of such all-out anti-Tehran measures. Despite 40 years of pressure and sanctions on the Islamic Republic, not only Iran has not stopped, but it has progressed, so the sanctions tactic has lost its effectiveness in a sense. This rather indicates that the United States seems to be escaping the frustration caused by its failure against the Iranian nation's iron will. The resilience of Iran's economy is not the only reason why the unlawful American maximum pressure campaign of sanctions against Tehran has failed. The maximum pressure policy against Iran was initiated by former U.S. President Donald Trump when he unilaterally pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal to strike a better agreement, which he hoped would restrict Iran's ballistic missile program and its influence in West Asia. Eventually, his hopes and aspirations became more and more far-fetched with each passing day. Now the Trump-imposed sanctions regime has been maintained by the Biden administration, although they realize it has been an abject failure. Could this be because they see no alternative course of action? What seems to be of very high significance is the fact that the Biden administration has realized that Trump's so-called maximum pressure campaign not only didn't work, but only helped strengthen the Islamic Republic of Iran in the international arena. Yet Iran stands. How so? Iran's economy and partners are diversified with initiatives to circumvent such U.S. measures.
Now in Brazil, the unrest over recent presidential election enters a new phase, and now supporters of former far-right president Jair Bolsonaro have invaded the Supreme Court and Congress in the capital, Brasilia. An estimated 3,000 people pushed through police barricades and stormed Congress, with some climbing on the roof. They also surrounded the presidential palace. Security forces fired tear gas but failed to disperse protesters who are disputing the October election result. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who is on an official trip to Sao Paulo, has described as fanatical fascists those who were involved in the invasion.
Like true vandals destroying what they found in front of them. We think there was a lack of security, and I wanted to tell you that all those people who did this will be found and punished. And these people, these vandals, what could we say? Our fanatical Nazis, fanatical fascists did what has never been done in this country.
Lula also declared a federal security intervention while authorizing his government to restore law and order in the capital. The leftist president was sworn in on January 1st. Bolsonaro didn't attend the ceremony and flew to Florida 2 days before the end of his mandate. He has repeatedly questioned the credibility of the country's voting system without providing proof. Scenes in Brasilia on Sunday were reminiscent of the 2021 U.S. Capitol attack by supporters of former President Donald Trump, a staunch Bolsonaro ally. The storming has drawn a chorus of condemnations from world leaders. Several South American countries, as well as the European Council, have denounced the incident.
That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new survey has shown that economists consider the probability of recession in the United States to approximately 70% in 2023. Also, nearly 9 out of 10 Americans are worried about economic recession, while two-thirds of voters believe the country's economy is in recession. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Hill newspaper has covered the story. According to a survey conducted by the National Association of Manufacturers, 62% of manufacturers expect the U.S. economy to enter a recession this year. The survey also found that 69% of manufacturers have a positive outlook for their company, the lowest figure since the third quarter of 2020. They cited struggles in attracting and finding workers, continued supply chain problems, and high raw material costs. It's the latest warning sign that the U.S. manufacturing industry is slowing down amid weakening demand and higher borrowing costs stemming from the Federal Reserve's interest rate hikes. The Institute for Supply Management said on Wednesday, 4th of January, that manufacturing contracted for the second straight month in December and reached its weakest point since May of 2020. To add insult to injury, some of manufacturers' top priorities fell flat at the end of last Congress, including changes to taxes, permitting and immigration policy. Congress refused to scrap new rules implemented this year as part of Republicans' 2017 tax bill that require companies to spread out their research and development tax deductions over 5 years rather than write them off immediately. Large manufacturers, including Ford and Boeing, lobbied lawmakers to reverse the new rules, warning that they would lead to layoffs. Lawmakers also rejected a proposal from Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, to streamline the permitting process for energy projects, a top priority for manufacturers that drew opposition from many environmental groups. The National Association of Manufacturers president and CEO, Jay Timmons, said in a statement, "Much-needed permitting reforms and provisions to strengthen our ability to conduct research and development, buy machinery and finance job-creating investments, which we need to promote growth within the sector, were left on the cutting room floor last year." The National Association of Manufacturers survey was conducted from 29th of November through to 13th of December and received 337 responses. The Wall Street Journal has also covered the same story. According to a new survey, two-thirds of economists at the largest U.S. financial institutions believe a recession will occur in 2023. The survey of 23 primary dealers, the large financial firms that do business directly with the U.S. Federal Reserve, found a majority expect a recession in the coming year. Among the top economic concerns cited included dwindling personal savings, the decline in the housing market, and tightening lending standards at many banks. It follows the U.S. Federal Reserve's rapid rate interest rate hikes to battle soaring inflation last year, which saw the benchmark rate rise from near zero in March to a range of 4.25% to 4.5% by the end of the year. The central bank forecast that will reach a range of 5% to 5.25% by the end of 2023. Its forecast doesn't call for a rate cut before 2024. The U.S. Federal Reserve policy rate is now at its highest level since prior to the 2008 recession, as the central bank attempts to bring inflation down without triggering an economic downturn. By the Fed's preferred measure, inflation is still running nearly three times its 2% goal, having risen earlier in 2022 at its fastest pace in the past 40 years. Rising prices have forced consumers to rapidly spend down savings, which soared during the COVID-19 pandemic thanks to stimulus measures and a slowdown in spending. The personal saving rates dropped to 2.4% in November, far below the pre-pandemic average of 8.8% in 2019. Consumers have also increasingly been tapping lines of credit to make ends meet. According to U.S. Federal Reserve data, total household borrowing reached $16.51 trillion in the third quarter, a $351 billion increase from the prior quarter and 8.3% jump from a year ago, the fastest annual increase in the past 14 years. Higher interest rates have had the most dramatic impact on the housing market, which saw a plunge in sales activity in the second half of last year. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage breached 7% in October for the first time since 2002, more than doubling in the span of 9 months. It has deflated a red-hot housing market fueled by historically low borrowing costs and a rush to the suburbs during the pandemic. According to the National Association of Realtors, existing home sales fell 7.7% in November from October, and November sales dropped a whopping 35.4% year over year. The National Association of Realtors added that the current 10-month streak of declines is the longest on record in the data that dates back to 1999. Banks have also tightened their lending standards in recent months, a traditional leading indicator of recession. The British newsletter The Financial Times has also reported on the same story. A top International Monetary Fund official said inflation in the United States has not turned a corner yet, and it is too early for the Federal Reserve to declare victory in the fight on rising prices. Geeta Gopinath, a deputy managing director of the fund, urged the U.S. Central Bank to press ahead with rate rises this year. She said it was important for the Federal Reserve to maintain restrictive monetary policy until a very definite, durable decline in inflation was evident in wages and industries not related to food or energy. She added, if you see the indicators in the labor market and if you look at very sticky components of inflation like services inflation, I think it's clear that we haven't turned the corner yet on inflation. The comments follow recent data showing that job openings, closely watched as a proxy for labour market shortages and pressure on employers to hand out wage increases higher than normal, fell only moderately in the month of November in the United States. Minutes of the US Federal Reserve December 13-14 policy meeting, published on Wednesday, 4th of January, showed that officials agreed that the central bank now needed to balance its fight against price pressures with the risk of slowing down the economy too much. In October, the International Monetary Fund cut its outlook for global economic growth in 2023, reflecting the continuing drag from the Ukraine war, as well as inflation pressure and higher interest rates engineered by central banks to rein in those price pressures.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and today we present you a thought-provoking saying from Imam Muhammad Taqi, peace upon him, the 9th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He who listens to the one who calls is actually serving him. If the caller was God's representative, he is then serving God. If the caller was the Satan's representative, he is then serving the Satan.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is the show A to Z. For today's program, Brother Muhammad is going to talk to us about Islamic education. Stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's discussion with regards to Islamic education, we would like to look at an important aspect of the Islamic lifestyle, which determines the obedient nature of the Muslim, and that is none other than the worship of Salah, the act of Salah before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, an act full of humility before Him, an act of sincere worship of the one true creator. When we look at the concept of introducing and nurturing Salah in the hearts and minds of our children, such that it transcends and manifests itself in the life of the child, we find there are certain conditions that need to be met when performing Salah. And these need to be introduced to the children gradually, although on one hand through practical means and on the other hand through verbal introductions and reminders. Today we would like to look at a few of them as we discuss the method to introduce Salah to our children. So when we talk about introducing aspects of Salah verbally, one of the important things that need to be reminded to the children is when Salah is being performed, it needs to be performed with the presence of the heart. And as the Holy Prophet recommends Abu Dharr, his close companion, and he says, "Oh Abu Dharr, two rak'ats, two units of Salah with reflection is better than you spend the whole night praying Salah without the presence of the heart towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala." And indeed, this presence of the heart is something that needs to be developed. It is something that cannot come overnight, obviously, but a person needs to empty his mind and heart of any distractions that come his or her way and focus his attention towards the majesty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and to realize that as if he is seeing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala before him. But if he or she cannot, then this person should realize that Allah is seeing and watching him as he prays. Indeed, this will create that sense of awareness in the heart of the person. Another thing that we need to keep in mind while praying Salah, and to be able to bring Salah to a higher level, and that is to keep away from consuming anything that is considered to be forbidden and haram. And as the Prophet says in one of his traditions, that any worship that is accompanied by consuming haram money or haram income, forbidden income, is like a building that is being built on plain sand and mud, such that this building does not have a basis. This building will be destroyed eventually. So indeed, any worship that we perform, not only salah, needs to be accompanied by pure halal income. And this will create the conditions right for the acceptance of the salah. We need to, as parents, introduce this concept to our children, especially those who will eventually become earners in their life. They will go out and bring an income for themselves and their family. And indeed, when they themselves consume halal, their salat will have an impact on their lives. And the halal income will have an impact on their children as well. And their children will learn this from their parents likewise. And this will go forward in making their salah more effective and pure and ready for acceptance before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. Until next time, fi amanillah, under God's protection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin, and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscious of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022.
Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by six centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4 meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial Alersi. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borisovich is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters. With soaring fuel prices, the importance of solar-powered vehicles is on the rise. Now a Kashmiri math teacher has gone viral for creating a car powered by solar energy. The car, which is fully covered with solar panels, uses sunlight to charge its battery. The vehicle also has a braking system that regenerates power to its batteries. The inventor of the car, Bilal Ahmed, says he has spent about $19,000 for his project and has not used external funds.
It was my dream to invent a solar car for the people of Kashmir. It took me 13 years to complete my dream. I'm thankful to the Almighty I succeeded in this project.
Bilal says he has built the car manually and without any automation. He hopes to put his fully automatic car into mass production to create jobs for local people.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state. A tax officer and his wife have set up the Pushpa Tree and Plant Hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed, breathe, and need cures, plants also bleed, breathe, and need cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail. Deep poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge. Staff at the National Zoo of Cuba in the capital city of Havana are celebrating a new arrival of a rare baby white rhinoceros. The little calf, named Al, quickly became popular among other animals in the park after he was born. He is part of a conservation program that will add to a gene bank for future breeding. Al is the second white rhinoceros to be born in captivity in 18 years. The park is home to 8 white rhinos and 4 black ones. Zoo staff say the park has one of the largest exhibits of this mammal among zoos in Latin America. White rhinos are endangered species and their population has dwindled due to illegal poaching and environmental destruction.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Catching fish makes you forget even the most complex problems. But think the moment you catch the strangest one. Well, a Cambodian fisherman has caught What researchers say is the world's biggest freshwater fish ever recorded. The giant fish, which weighs around 300 kilograms and 4 meters long, was caught last week from the Mekong River. The female stingray was released back into water after being electronically tagged to allow scientists to monitor her movement and behavior. The fish was named Barami, meaning full moon in the Khmer language. An American fish biologist, Dana Lee, says the data collected from Barami can help protect the species and its habitat.
We got a call this morning at breakfast that they had caught a giant stingray here at Coprea. So we dropped everything. People came up from Phnom Penh, and we're here now just at sunset, just tagged the giant, a 330-kilogram giant stingray here in the Mekong River, and released it here right at sunset.
The stingray dethrones the former record holder, a 290-kilogram catfish found in northern Thailand in 2005. More than 1,000 species live in the Mekong River. The famous waterway originates in China and twists south through parts of Thailand, Laos, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Scientists have warned that plastic waste and dam threaten wildlife even in the deepest stretches of the Mekong. Geologists are rejoicing over a new discovery. A 290 million old fossil forest has accidentally been found in southern Brazil. A team of geologists had been sent to the state of Paraná to investigate the rocks there. To their surprise, they were able to find over 160 logs of lycophytes, an extinct variety of the vascular plant subgroup. It's quite rare occurrence that a large number of fossils of the plant were found preserved in upright position for such a long time. The forest itself was discovered in 2018 when a street was being constructed over there. So far, only two other similar collections have been found in smaller forest areas of Brazil and Argentina.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
With a coming to power of the extreme right-wing Israeli politician Benjamin Netanyahu, the tension between Palestinians and Israelis has increased. For example, the recent incursion of the Minister of National Security of the Zionist regime to the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound was followed by strong international condemnations. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Palestinian Wafa news agency has covered this story and tells us more. Palestine's foreign ministry has strongly condemned the intrusion of Israel's far-right security minister into the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, warning that the violation of international law as well as the historical status quo of the site could trigger a religious war. It said in a statement on Wednesday, 4th of January, "We alarmingly call on the international community to act urgently and halt the impending explosion of the situation in the Palestinian territories and the grave threats that Israeli crimes and violations pose to international peace and security." The statement added, "Ben-Gvir is widely regarded as a fascist who has repeatedly made provocative moves against Palestinians and the sacred Al-Aqsa Mosque, and has frequently stoked violence and terror with his inflammatory remarks, hateful threats, and controversial actions." The Palestinian Foreign Ministry said, "The Palestinian leadership holds the occupying Israeli regime and its politicians and officials fully responsible for the repercussions of their continued illegal and provocative measures, which will have far-reaching consequences for regional and international peace and security." The statement said, "Israel's continued acts of aggression at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound are meant to cause division so as to facilitate Jewish worship there and impose Israeli control over the holy site." The statement added, "We remind the international community that Israel has no rightful claim or sovereignty over Al-Quds, including the old city of Al-Quds, its eastern sector, its walls, and its holy sites." The statement noted, "All countries and organizations must act urgently and collectively to condemn all Israeli acts of aggression and demand an immediate halt to the practices against the Palestinian people and their holy sites." Moreover, a group of Jordanian lawmakers on Wednesday, 4th of January, carried a motion urging the government to expel the Israeli ambassador to Amman. The move is a protest to the crimes against Palestinians and Ben-Gvir's desecration of the holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. The Jordanian legislators also urged Arab and international parliaments to immediately take action against Israeli violations and called for revoking the nation's peace treaty with Israel. Speaker of the lower house of the Jordanian parliament, Ahmad Safadi, said, "Israel's provocative practices and incursions into the holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound are proof of its terrorism, extremism, and destructive measures that fuel regional conflict." He demanded a cessation of such provocative and unacceptable acts, which would further escalate tensions in the region and undermine prospects for a political solution and a comprehensive peace plan. The Speaker of the lower house of the Palestinian Parliament, Ahmad Safadi, reiterated that only Jordan has sovereignty over the holy sites in the city of Al-Quds. The Al-Ahad television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Palestinian resistance movements have condemned the visit by far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir to the holy site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, warning the occupying Israeli regime that there will be consequences for such acts of desecration. The Palestinian resistance groups made the remarks in a statement on Tuesday, 3rd of January, after Ben-Gvir stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds under heavy security earlier in the day. They said Ben-Gvir's storming of Al-Aqsa Mosque was dangerous and has provoked the feelings of our nation and the Muslim world, and it may cause a religious war in the region. The statement added, "The occupying regime is fully responsible for the consequences of its aggression against the Palestinian nation and their Islamic and Christian sanctuaries." The Palestinian resistance groups further called on all the Palestinians to mobilize to confront the Israeli regime's plots for Al-Aqsa and increase their presence at the holy site. They further noted that they are seriously monitoring Israeli extremism, continued attacks on Al-Aqsa, and will keep defending the holy site, stressing that the occupying regime will not be successful in changing the realities on the ground. Additionally, the head of the Political Bureau of the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, has called upon Muslim leaders to rise up and defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque against the dangerous plots of the Israeli regime and its most far-right cabinet in history. Ismail Haniyeh called for immediate and effective measures to safeguard Al-Aqsa Mosque and stop incursions and sinister plans of the Israeli occupiers. The Hamas leader said, "We would like to notify you of an imminent danger threatening our holy sites in the Palestinian territories, most notably the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, after the far-right Israeli administration took office and embarked on escalatory moves by allowing its national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, to storm the revered site with religious and political purposes." Ismail Haniyeh added, "This is a serious development that cannot be tolerated or accepted at all. It suggests the beginning of a new bout of violence across the Palestinian lands, which will have direct impact on the entire region." The English website of the Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. United Nations Security Council members have underscored the need to maintain a decades-old status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds after the recent Israeli desecration of the holy site. The move was prompted on Thursday, 5th of January 2023, after a contentious visit by far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, which infuriated Palestinians over the breach of the holy site status quo that allows only Muslim worship at the compound. The 15-member United Nations Council discussed the Israeli storming following a request by the United Arab Emirates and China, with the Palestinian and the occupying regime's representative trading barbs over the sacrilegious move at the world body.
Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens and break it down from a Muslim perspective. On today's show, we'll analyse what might be behind the suspicious murder of an Iranian Sunni imam who was found dead after initially being kidnapped earlier this month in southeastern of the Islamic Republic. So who was Molavi Abdul Wahid Righi, and why was he killed? This next report will shed some light on this upsetting episode.
An Iranian Sunni cleric was kidnapped and murdered by unknown assailants in early December amid ongoing Western-backed anti-Iran violence across the country. Molavi Abdul Wahid Righi was the Friday prayers leader of Imam Hussein Mosque in Khash, a southeastern county in Sistan and Balochistan province. Local forces had been mobilized to find the whereabouts of the cleric, but his dead body was found not long after his disappearance on a roadside with three bullet wounds to the head. Prior to his death, Molavi Righi expressed strong support for the Islamic Republic of Iran and admitted his views earned him death threats. Iranian authorities have issued warnings against enemy plots aimed at destabilizing Sistan and Balochistan, a region home to many Sunni Muslims. Sectarianism is a tried and tested tactic used by the West to destroy Muslim countries who fail to submit to Western political hegemony. Iran may be facing the same challenge. Meanwhile, the violence has claimed the lives of dozens of people and members of security forces, while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country.
Well, joining us in the studio today are two esteemed guests. The first is Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, a UK-based Muslim scholar and lecturer who studied inside Iran for many years, and Masood Shajarieh, the head of the London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me on the show today. Masood, I'm going to come straight to you on this because you may have met the martyred Maulana a few times in the past. Could you just start off by telling me what your impression was of the man?